Ladies and gentlemen, now it's Too Late with Alan Mosley.
Almost. Maybe next
time. Almost got stuck. Woo!
Guys, welcome back for another episode of It's Too Late. Not just another episode, it's episode 300 of It's Too Late. I am your host, Alan Mosley, joined as always by the number one producer in late night. It's Dave Wilimowski. Dave, how are you doing?
Hey. I can't believe I've been here for 300 episodes. It doesn't even feel that long.
Yeah. You've been here?
Though? I'm doing pretty good, though.
Where were you for like the first 150?
I was hiding.
Oh, that's...
Oh, no. I'm, I'm doing great. How you doing?
I'm doing good, but I'll tell you what would make things even better. Is if everyone got their tickets to the 6th annual It's Too Late live show coming to you Saturday, May 18th, which is like tomorrow. Jesus.
Basically. Yeah.
Yeah.
Get your tickets.
I probably have to pay for stuff now. Ugh. Gross.
Oh.
Dave, this is the time. Yeah. If we're going to bail with the money, now's the time. Yeah. Anyway, it's Saturday, May 18th in beautiful Columbia, Tennessee. But you got to get your tickets. They're over there in chat. They're down on the show notes. Get your tickets. There's going to be kangaroos, lemurs, just sloth singular. There's only one, you know, but he's fine. He's not lonely.
That's all you need.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. What are two going to do? They're not going to do anything, right?
How many sloths does one man need?
I don't know. Apparently, the answer to the kangaroo question is three.
That seems like too many kangaroos.
Yeah. Too many, quite frankly. Aren't they going to box? Aren't they like super aggressive territorial animals, kangaroos?
They seem dangerous.
I don't know. Anyway, it's Saturday, May 18th. Get your tickets. Or don't.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But do it.
Yeah, but do it. Actually, you can go on that link and you can just you can not buy a ticket and just give us money.
Mm-hmm.
It'll let you do that. Yeah.
Then you can stay home. It's fine.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll even put you in the credits on that. We'll put everybody in the credits.
There you go.
Don't you want your name attached to this program? Oh, okay. All right. Maybe we won't put your name in the credits. Starting off the news tonight, 62-year-old John Barnett, who worked for military industrial complex mainstay Boeing for 32 years, has blown the whistle on his former employer. Barnett now heads to court to testify that Boeing raked in billions of dollars in defense contracts while engaging in flagrant violations of safety for its commercial airliners, putting millions of Americans at risk. I know the audacity of these people. You know, I wish Mr. Barnett good luck. In other news tonight, Boeing whistleblower John Barnett was found dead in a hotel parking lot just days after testifying against the airplane giant. The cause of death was listed as an apparent suicide via a self-inflicted gunshot wound.
Of course.
That's
weird.
Life comes at you fast, doesn't it? A Boeing spokesperson did release a statement about Barnett's death. Here, take a look.
I can't believe you committed suicide. I cannot believe you committed suicide. How could you have done this? How could you have committed suicide?
Where did you get that?
I don't know. This most recent tale of a Jeffrey Epstein-esque end of life inspired me to run a poll over on Twitter. Check this out right here. We asked respondents, do you believe the American ruling class, including the government, military industrial complex, corporations, etc., has murdered people? Nearly 96% of respondents said yes. They believe their own state elites have people assassinated. And of course, the other 4% are probably the murderers. In other news, Dave, oh my God, did you see all that stuff going on in Haiti?
Oh, yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah. Apparently, it's gotten so bad, they're resorting to cannibalism. In fact, the new leader of Haiti is a gangster named Barbecue.
Barbecue.
Barbecue. Do we have a picture of Barbecue?
Oh, yeah. Here.
Yeah, that's him.
Oh, I seen him somewhere.
Yeah, I synced it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Seeing is believing. I tell you what, Dave, with all this bad news out of Haiti, it's really eating me up inside.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
You see where this is going? Yeah.
No, I mean,
I'm sure a person being eaten alive is very rare. unless they're well done.
Okay. That was kind of funny.
Oh, yeah. Come on, Dave. Don't give me the cold shoulder.
Oh.
What? You don't think these jokes are in very good taste?
Oh, you're catching me off guard now. All right.
I'm just saying that we should stew on them for a while.
All right, yeah, and we should probably get on with the show. It's fine.
All right, I'll quit roasting them.
Oh, come on. Dude. Seriously.
Dave, I'm just trying to serve my fellow man.
Alan, stop.
All right, okay.
Oh.
One more. All right, let's not judge the Haitians too swiftly. I'm sure there's a good person in each and every one of them. And finally this evening, a Wisconsin man was charged with battery, disorderly conduct, and the use of a dangerous weapon after becoming intoxicated and terrorizing an entire neighborhood. What's the name of this menace to society, you ask? Well, of course, that would be 42-year-old Green Bay resident D's Nuts.
Okay.
Yeah. So if you've been wondering who they've been talking about this whole time, there he is. Speaking of roasting D's Nuts, let me tell you about tonight's sponsor, which is, that's right, Fox & Sons Coffee, which you can find at foxandsons.com. If you use promo code ITL, it says fans of It's Too Late, but I'm pretty sure you can just use that code even if you're not.
Yeah, I bet
you could. Like, how does he differentiate?
Does he know all of us?
I don't know. Steve's a bullshitter. He didn't know. All right. But anyway, if you use ITL, you get 18% off orders of $25 or more. Now, shipping's always free over orders of $37.99 or more at foxandsons.com. I actually have a bag right here. This is the Den Blend Light. And of course, the Den Blend Light is good because, why, Dave?
Because it's a light.
The light skin. Jesus Christ, it's episode 300 and you don't know the bits by now?
No, not this one.
Light skin beans are, of course, superior to dark skin beans. That's right.
Perhaps I didn't want to say that on the internet.
All right. I needed a little pick-me-up there. Anyway, that's Fox & Sons Coffee, which you can find at foxandsons.com. Use promo code. It's too late. Guys, we're going to be back with the meme of the week in the viewer mail right after this commercial break. Don't go away. Back to the show, everybody. Tonight's fortune is embrace new adventures and watch your life come alive.
Nah.
No. No, that sounds silly. I'm not going to do that. Yeah. That sounds expensive. No. Yeah, we don't have any money
for
that.
This economy?
Yeah. Are you kidding me? Well, I don't know. I'm going to be having a little adventure this weekend, though. I'll tell you about that later. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Let me tell you about tonight's other sponsor, which is the Tennessee Hot Sauce Company, which you can find at tnhotsauceco.com. If you use promo code It's Too Late, you get 10% off your entire order of salsas such as this right here. This is the ginger jalapeno. Can we get a shot of that right there?
Ooh, yeah.
Oh, I know. Yeah. Isn't that your nickname for Mary?
I got a little ginger jalapeno right here.
That's your... Anyway, I don't know. You took that to a place I don't feel comfortable with anymore. So we're going to put this one away for a while.
Yeah, let's do that different flavor.
Yeah, all right. Hear that, Mary? Dave's looking for a different flavor. So that is the Tennessee Hot Sauce Co., which you can find at tnhotsauceco.com. Use promo code. It's too late. Hey, Dave.
Yes, Alan.
What time is it?
It's time for meme of the week. Hey, wait, you just said that.
Oh man, yeah, I knew that would get you. Yeah.
Yeah.
But we do have a bonus meme. Check out the bonus meme. We're doing it, Dave. You and me.
Oh, no. Wait, if you'll just excuse me a moment.
Yeah. Oh, man. How are we doing on time, Dave? We good?
Yeah. I think we got enough time for all the viewer mail.
All right. Well, let's answer all the viewer mail.
Actually, no. We're doing all right.
We're doing all right now. Halfway through this, yeah. We won't be doing all right anymore.
No.
Aaron Kinder writes, Dear Alan and Dave, what do people misunderstand about you the most? Dave, what do people misunderstand about you?
You know, I'm actually a pretty sharp guy. And even though I might not act like it on the show, I like the self-deprecating
humor. Yeah, good job, Dave. Yeah. Got it.
I lean into that, you know, I act silly and stuff, but yeah. What about you?
See, Dave and I are just playing characters on television.
Yeah.
So this is just who we are on the show, but in real life, of course, Dave is a pretty sharp guy, and me, I'm actually really nice.
Oh.
I will never back you again. I'm such a nice guy that I'm never going to back you again. Gary Deischer writes, Dear Alan and Dave, what's one of the best things about living in the town you live in? Dave, best thing about the town you live in?
Oh, you know, it's kind of average, you know, it's never too busy. There's not a lot of traffic. I got a 10-minute commute to work. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of bars, a lot of churches. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Nice place. Yeah. Nice place to raise a kid. How about you?
You were telling me it's very white. That's what you said off air, but yeah,
I did not say something.
Yeah,
because it's not.
Oh yeah, you know what? Actually, I tell you what, we're only a few weeks away from Mule Day.
Oh, yeah,
in Columbia,
Worth
Tennessee.
It right there.
1st of April is Mule Day, ladies and gentlemen. But you know, the locals don't really dig it too much because if you've seen one Mule Day, you've kind of seen them all. Yeah. Like, look, mules.
All over town.
Yeah. Just crapping, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Because you ever think, like, in the olden days when everyone was riding horses around, they had, like, street urchins that their job would be to clear the crap off the roads for, like, you know, a tenpenny or whatever.
That.
Yeah.
It was really bad.
We don't have those.
New York City was nuts.
Yeah. So for the one day of the year where we have that problem, but we don't have that solution.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I guess named a bad thing about living in my town instead of a good thing. Ponchos. There you go.
Oh, nice.
Let's see. Celeste Annis writes, Dear Alan and Dave, what is something you would enjoy eating 300 of? Dave?
Ooh.
300 of.
300, that's a lot. I guess cheeseburgers. I really like cheeseburgers. Yeah. So.
Oh, you and me. We're going to do that. You and me and Dave are going to eat 300 cheeseburgers at the live
event. At the event.
Yeah.
I'm actually really looking forward to that.
Yeah, it's going to be pretty hype. Mary, stop it. We're doing it. just get with the program. All right.
Sliders in a bed.
Lyle Durio writes, Dear Alan and Dave, would you like to come help me build a barn?
No. Oh.
Dave, you're from Pennsylvania. Y'all are like into that, right?
Well, not all of us, but I would actually like to go there just to, you know, learn from Lyle how to build a barn. It'd be a neat skill to have.
Well, he's asking for help. He's not saying come watch me do it. I don't think Lyle's Amish. I don't know. Yeah. You're the one who looks the most Amish out of us.
Yeah. I'll go there and it's just automatically raise a barn. Like I didn't even know I could do it.
Yeah. Just in a day. Yeah. Lyle, the answer is no. All right. Andrew Avery writes, sorry, Lyle. Andrew Avery writes, dear Alan and Dave, if you had a fear of speed bumps, would you slowly get over it?
Oh, that's pretty good.
Yeah. Well, if you don't want your alignment out of whack, then.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. Brooke Atkinson writes, dear Alan and Dave, what is the most important book of this century? Nerd. My goodness.
Right. Read books.
Reading is for rich people, Brooke. Mm-hmm. All right. Keith McQuarrie writes, dear Alan and Dave, are you concerned about the Mothman? No.
Mothman? I don't think he's from around here.
No.
Oh, no, but he shows up if there's going to be a tragedy. He could be anywhere. I heard he was at Chernobyl.
Yeah. I know where he is every Wednesday night at 9 o'clock Eastern time. Chris Melliard writes, dear Alan and Dave, will AOC be in Congress as long as Nancy Pelosi? Yeah.
No.
Well, it's not like you or I have any say on the matter.
Yeah.
It's those tards up there are going to vote for her. Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah.
It is what it is. You know, AOC should come to Mule Day. What? Josh Wright writes, dear Alan and Dave, with St. Patrick's Day coming up, how do you plan to keep the British off your land?
Ooh.
I mean, probably the same way we always have. It's just put them in
Rifles.
The old meat grinder.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I was going to say something stupid like toothbrushes, but...
Oh. Yeah, I was just going to kill them.
Yeah.
Just shoot them, yeah. Like, you know those red coats that they wear? And you're like, why do they, like, everyone can see them in big lines of red coats. What is that for? See, some people used to think that the reason why they wore all those red coats is because it was very intimidating to see, like, that the British military front coming at you. But as it turns out, those red coats don't reflect bullets.
Reflect.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Yeah.
So they don't really work. That's what I'm saying.
No. Okay. Yeah.
Like they're not level 4 plates. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thanks for ruining the bit, Dave. Mary Lynn Wilomowski writes, dear Alan and Dave. Dear Alan and Dave. What a perfect time for Mary's question. Yeah. When someone sneezes, do you say bless you or nothing at all?
All right.
What's the story, Dave?
Okay. So growing up, I think my grandfather used to be like Catholic and then he switched to Baptist, you know, and he was real like Bible thumper. And I just remember him yelling at me saying, well, not yelling, but lecturing me saying, bless you. Like you're blessing them because their spirit left their body or something or something like that. But he, my grandfather told me not to say it, I think.
Yeah.
So I just never did.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Why are you so rude? You're just supposed to.
It does feel rude, but I just
like I'm not even a religious person and I do say it.
Yeah.
Because it's just what you say.
And I can't pronounce that, but Gesundheit or whatever that is. And that probably just means the same thing in German.
Yeah. Imagine that. The freaking Polak doesn't know the German word. Yeah. you people have had a lot of contentious moments in the past, I've understood from perusing history. Yeah. Oh well.
You get rolled over every once in a while.
Oh, Dave. All right. Guys, we're going to be back with Mike Meharry of the 10th Amendment Center right after this commercial break. Don't go away.
Funny, right?
What the fuck is going on here? What have you been doing? What have you been doing here? What have you been doing?
talk about our feelings.
No, but here's how to start up a 250,000-watt generator. First, engage manual control. Then, arm your wicket system. Then, open the wicket slowly, start at about 30%. Then, engage your exciter. Match your voltage, match your frequency, and match your phase. And at just the moment when you come into sync, engage your made grid tiebreaker and tie into the national power grid. Then kick everything into automatic control so the PLC can take over. And that's how you bring a 250,000-watt generator online and tie into the national power grid.
Welcome back to the show, everybody. Our guest this evening, who has now, I think, the fifth most appearances on the show behind me, the host, and then the three people who have been producers on the show, so they were on like every week for some number of months or years. And then there's Mike Meharry, who's the National Communications Director of the 10th Amendment Center, which you can find at 10thamendmentcenter.com. I think if you put /donate on the end, and then there's going to be a little blank in there, and you put in your card, and you put in 999-999-99, and then you hit the enter button and just see what happens.
I think that's a fantastic idea. I totally approve. Let's do that.
All right. Well, speaking of money we don't have, hey, Mike, you and I talked a couple of weeks ago about coming back on the show for episode 300. And I said, you know, you've been writing a lot lately about the dreaded CBDCs and the concept of the weaponization of the dollar. So I want you to tell folks at home, what do you mean? What is weaponizing the dollar?
So basically, it's just using the dollar as a foreign policy tool. So the U.S. has economic power. The dollar is the reserve currency. Everybody needs dollars. And so the United States can cut off access to dollars to punish wayward countries for doing things that they don't like. For instance, after Russia invaded Ukraine, the United States and most of her Western allies froze all of Russia's assets. And that means that Russia can't access those assets. Now they're floating the idea, and Janet Yellen actually brought this up publicly a couple of weeks ago. They want to unfreeze those assets and basically just give them to Ukraine. So you might say that they're talking about stealing Russia's assets. And you might justify that. You might say, well, that's fine because Russia's bad and Russia invaded Ukraine. But the reason we call it the weaponization of the dollar is because other countries are watching this. And, you know, if I have control of something that you have, and you know that I'm going to use that to manipulate you, what are you going to do with that thing?
Sure. Yeah. I want to keep it away from you.
Yeah, exactly. You're going to try to get rid of it, right?
There's a little bit of confusion there. If somebody says, because we heard this too with Iran, right? It's like, oh, well, Iran has frozen assets, and then the U.S. decides what to do with them or to give them back, which, by the way, kind of implies that they took them. Just FYI, or in the example you're using, they froze Russia's assets. Now, besides the fact that it's really cold in Russia, so I don't think that's the kind of frozen you're talking about. How does that process happen? Like, how does a Western nations, in this case the United States, have control of assets of Russia's to begin with that they can freeze? How do you even go about doing that?
Well, there's a lot of ways within the financial system and globally that the United States can exert influence, and one of the most powerful things is this system called SWIFT. And I can't remember the acronym off the top of my head, but basically it's a giant electronic network that facilitates global payments all across the world. And because the dollar is the world's reserve currency, the SWIFT system runs on dollars. And therefore, because the U.S. controls the dollars, it can actually shut countries out of that SWIFT system. And that's what they've done with Russia. Russia simply can't do business. So they have to find alternatives in order to facilitate business. And of course they do, but it's inconvenience for them. And why would you want to put up with that? So why not just create your own payment systems that are based on rubles or yen or yuan or gold or whatever? And so that's the difficulty of using the dollar as a weapon. Other countries see it. They're like, we don't want to be manipulated. Let's just get rid of dollars. And that's a big problem for the United States, because one of the ways the U.S. has been able to continue to borrow and spend at the tremendous level that it has is because there's a great demand for dollars around the world, because dollars facilitate global trade. You know, if China's buying something from Saudi Arabia, they convert it to dollars and then do the business. If you don't need dollars, then demand for dollars will drop and the value of the dollar will drop. So we're kind of playing with fire. And I say we, I mean the government. I don't have anything to do with it. But kind of playing with fire in that if you're undermining demand for your own thing, for your dollars, that could significantly alter the U.S. economy in the future. If enough countries say, you know what, we're done with the dollar, we're going to use some alternative, the inflationary pressure in the United States would be tremendous.
Well, I think one of the times you've been on the show in the past, we talked about, and forgive me using such a heavy term, but regime uncertainty, mm-hmm. where, you know, if a country, say the aforementioned Iran or Russia or China or anyone else, if they were to sign a treaty for trade or nuclear armament or what have you with the U.S. government during one particular presidential administration, and then 4/8 years later, the next administration comes in and says, oh, no, this isn't good anymore, and tears it up, then, you know, as you put it, the world is watching, right? So then why would any country enter into any agreement with the United States after that?
Right. And, you know, it's interesting because most people, when you talk about weaponization of the dollar and de-dollarization, which is kind of what goes along with it, and that means using other currencies instead of the dollar, so replacing the dollar with other things. Usually when you talk about that, you think of enemies of the United States. You think of China, who incidentally is buying a lot of gold right now, or you think of Russia or Iran. But back during the Trump or the early years of the administration, the Trump administration, when they tore up the Iran nuclear treaty, the European Union wasn't real keen on that. And so they actually created an alternative payment system so that they could continue to do business with Iran using euros instead of dollars. So it's not just, you know, enemies. It could also be allies. I mean, nobody wants to have a billy club hanging over their head. And that's the danger. If you use a hammer, there's always the chance it's going to swing back and hit you. And I think that that's the risk that the U.S. is playing when it uses the dollar as basically a weapon.
Well, kind of as a brief segue here, so let's talk a minute about CBDCs, which is central bank digital currency, if I get that correct. So what is a CBDC? Because I think a lot of people, when they hear that phrase or when they see it talked about on the news, they think to themselves, well, wait a minute, I don't have any cash in my wallet. I just use a debit card and it just comes out of my account and goes into their account. Well, it was all done with ones and zeros online. Isn't that a central bank digital currency? I don't understand the difference.
Well, it is there is some similarity, and there really is a broader movement globally to get rid of cash, because if you and I do a transaction in cash, nobody can trace that transaction, right? I mean, unless somebody actually saw it and took pictures. When we do business,
I can promise
card,
you there's no pictures out there with me having money, but yeah, go ahead.
And so if you're doing, you know, transaction through a bank using a bank card, then there's a record. Central bank digital currency takes that to a whole nother level. It's basically a digital dollar. It is issued by the central bank, and it is fully traceable from front to back end with the, you know, it's basically like Bitcoin. Most people are probably familiar with Bitcoin. It's done on this thing called the blockchain. And you can go back and you can look at every change of hands that Bitcoin has gone through. A central bank digital currency would allow the U.S. government to do the exact same thing. And since everything is controlled within that closed system, then the control that they can have over you is tremendous. I mean, first off, just tracking. They could find out when you go get your coffee at Starbucks, which might not matter, or they could find out when you go buy your AR-15 or go get an abortion. So lots of ways to track what you're doing. And then there's the whole potential of them being able to just basically turn off your money, which you have some risk of that in the normal commercial banking system, although banks are ostensibly private. A central bank digital currency is controlled directly by the government. So if you were to run afoul of the government, they could just say, well, you know, Alan Mosley, we're going to turn off your money. Not that you have any, but if you did, they could turn it off.
Oh, no.
I went there.
No, that's okay. Well, so that kind of gets me thinking, because you had mentioned earlier talking about some of the different the different forms of transactions and different countries around the world doing de-dollarization, saying, well, fine, if you're going to take your ball and go home, then we'll figure out other ways of transacting with one another. I think something sort of the boogeyman in the room, right, is the infamous, the almost mythical at this point, collapse of the dollar. Oh, the whole rest of the world's going to quit accepting dollars and the dollar's going to collapse and it's not going to be the global reserve currency anymore. So I want you to talk, if you could, because I know that that's a really big topic in of itself, but kind of give us some insight into sort of this like double-edged sort of conversation of, on the one hand, there's lots of people looking for ways of transacting without using dollars. You think of cryptocurrency, for instance. People think, well, the dollar's bad and we feel like it's going to eventually collapse anyway, so we're going to figure out other methods. And yet at the same time, if you and I woke up tomorrow morning and the dollar had collapsed and the rest of the world wasn't accepting it, that would be, I mean, an economic doomsday for all of us. I mean, globally, it would be an economic doomsday. So try for us, like, again, I know I'm giving you like, oh, this is like two sentences max from Meharry, but try to square the circle of, on the one hand, people are almost purposely poking barbs at the dollar. But on the other hand, if the dollar were to collapse tomorrow, we'd be doomed.
Yeah, it is kind of a double-edged sword. And I think that kind of the answer to that question lies in the how does this play out, right? Because I do think, ultimately, the dollar is doomed. All fiat currencies are doomed because governments can't resist the temptation to continue to create more of it. And that's the beauty of something like a gold standard or a commodity-based money. There's a finite amount that you can expand it. But if you have just fiat money that's backed by nothing, you can create it infinitely. Governments can't resist that temptation. So eventually they inflate away its value. And every fiat currency ultimately has failed. And the dollar will eventually fail too. But I don't think it's going to be like we wake up tomorrow and all of a sudden, you know, you read the headline on Yahoo News, the dollar has collapsed. I think you're looking at something that's going to play out a long time over time. A slow decline, as empires typically do. And you're going to see the value of the dollar slowly degrade, the US's power in the world slowly devolve away. And eventually you'll wake up one day and realize, oh my gosh, the dollar's collapsed. It's one of those things that they talk about how things happen slowly and then all at once. I think it's very slowly. And then at some point, there's going to be that tipping point. But I don't think it's going to happen fast. And I think people are wise to find alternatives to the dollar, alternatives to anything. And really, in my opinion, that's how money should be set. It shouldn't be set by the government or some institution or some PhD somewhere. Money should evolve, as money did in the past, out of the market. What do people want to use? What do people find to be the best money? Historically, gold and silver have been considered sound good money. There may be something else, but let those things compete in the marketplace. Right now we have a monopoly on money where governments control all of it, and we see the results of it. We see profligate spending, we see unsustainable debt, we see booms and busts and collapses, and that's going to continue until we have sound money. So I think that we need to be aware of what's going on with the dollar. I don't think we need to panic about it. I don't think, you know, that you need to go take all your money out of the bank and, you know, buy silver bars. But if you want to, go to moneymetals.com because that's the place to buy your silver bars. But I do think that we're seeing this slow degradation of the dollar, more and more people wanting to find alternatives. And I think in the near term, we may see more of of a system where there are multiple reserve currencies with the dollar having a little less. And again, that's going to cause problems for our economy, because as the world depends less on the dollar, we're not going to be able to print as many. And that's a problem for a government that can't seem to get its spending under control.
Well, on that note, Mike, we're going to take a quick commercial break. But I think when we come back for episode 300, you and I will do a little bit of a potpourri segment where I'm going to try to paint you into a corner on all the most dramatic topics of the day so that everyone walks away from this video with a downvote.
Nothing I like better than a potpourri of topics.
Well, I think it's potpourri, but God forbid I can stop you from pot for five freaking... Guys, we're going to be back with Mike Meharry at the 10th Amendment Center right after this commercial break. Don't go away. It's Too Late with Alan Mosley is proudly supported by Fox & Sons Coffee. Fans of It's Too Late use code ITL and receive 18% off orders of $25 or more. Shipping's always free on orders over $37.99, so get yours today at their website, which is www.foxandsons.com. It's www.foxandsons.com. Welcome back to the show, everybody. We are still joined by my good friend and Mike Meharry of the 10th Amendment Center. Mike, are you ready to start alienating the audience?
I'm ready. Let's do it.
All right. Which of these two options would you rather have? $1 million of Bitcoin or $1 million of gold and silver?
Oh, I can't have both.
Nope, you got to pick one. You're getting $1 million, but you can only accept it in one of those two ways. And you can't mix them either. No diversifying the portfolio, A or B.
All right, well, I'm going hard money. I'm going gold and silver.
Okay. Do you want to say why, or do you want to say screw them?
I mean, I am not anti-Bitcoin or anti-crypto. I'm not Peter Schiff. But I do know that gold and silver have stood the test of time. They've been money for 5,000 years. They have all of the attributes of money. And if you look at over time, they tend to hold their value. You know, I don't think that gold and silver are necessarily good investments because they're non-yielding, but they do hold their value. An ounce of gold would buy you a fine suit in 1900, and an ounce of gold will buy you a fine suit today. So I'm going to go with that confidence, and not that I'm dissing Bitcoin or crypto, but if I'm taking $1 million, I want to be confident that I'm still going to have $1 million in 10 years. So I'm going to go with the hard money.
All right. Okay. We'll accept that. Crypto bros, the comment section is below. That's at Mike Meharry. All right. The next question, Mike, I know you saw it cause you retweeted it. I actually put up a poll this past week. That the inspiration for the poll was this whole business going on with the Boeing whistleblower and all that stuff, who was found tragically having killed himself after blowing the whistle on Boeing and being excited to testify against him. Imagine that. What a change of heart he had. Which leads me to this poll right here. Do you believe the American ruling class, be it government, military, industrial complex, corporations, whatever, do they have people murdered? Now, this is not meant to be they have ever. This is they are currently doing so. Now, 96.5% of the respondents said, yeah, the Illuminati is picking us off one by one. Sure, why not? And only 3.5% are, in fact, the killers in this poll. Mike Meharry, does your government kill people?
Absolutely. I've already voted. I'm in the, 95.6.
Yeah.
I'm in that group. I'm not in the killer group. I'm in the killed group.
So okay.
I don't even think it's that cynical in this day and age. I mean, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe just because I'm cynical, but I mean, I wouldn't even hesitate. It's not even something that makes me go, I'm certain they do. If not domestically, and I think they probably do domestically, but certainly there are often people overseas.
Yeah, well, so that's the thing, is that I think overwhelmingly people know, oh yeah, well, you know, be it the CIA or just the military in general, sure, we're drone striking people left and right, and there's always collateral damage. So if you're counting that, then it's an obvious slam dunk. But the spirit of the poll really more is, do you think there are extrajudicial killings of American citizens on American soil?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, again, I don't even hesitate with that. I mean, we're talking about a CIA that experimented with LSD on its own people. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
There are no scruples here, you know, and you've got these people like, it's for the better good, the greater good. So
no, we're not even doing greater. It's just better at this point.
It's just better. Yeah. It's for the average.
Yeah. All right. Well, boy, I didn't mince words with that one. All right. So what was it? A couple of weeks ago now, I did a little segment on Aaron Bushnell, which was the young airman who self-immolated, which is really just too metal of a word to say, tragically set themselves on fire in protest of Israel's actions in Gaza and against the Palestinians. And that, of course, sparked a lot of conversation online. A lot of people on one side saying, basically, well, this guy's just mentally ill, and people on the other side saying that, oh, well, this was quite a protest. And of course, he's not the first person to have ever done that. Thinking back famously to the war in Vietnam. But my take on it was more of if that were one of my loved ones, I would be very disappointed in their actions. I'm not going to lie to you, because as I cynically say, I think that's something you and I have very much in common is, you know, gosh, Meharry, it's been a couple of weeks since he died and Palestine still isn't free. Imagine that.
Right.
What was your take on that?
Yeah, I'm kind of with you. You know, we live in a world that loves symbolism. You might say symbolism over substance. And it was certainly a vivid symbolic act. And you can't deny that it sparked discussion. But did it spark real change? Or did it even change anybody's mind? I doubt it. And you know, I've had this discussion in private. I mean, there's a lot of things that he could have done beyond setting himself on fire to make the situation better. And I think you mentioned, you know, stand in front of the Army Recruiting Center and talk young men out of joining up for the Empire Brigades. So, yeah, I think that it's a little bit sick and twisted, and it's, you know, certainly sensational. And I'm not going to deny that it created a stir, but I think it was unfortunately symbolism over substance. And, you know, I mean, I hate to say that and denigrate the guy's life, but I don't know. I'm with you on that. I think there are better, more effective ways, but those are hard ways. You know, people don't want to do the work. It's like,
yes.
It's like people who want to complain about the person in office or the bill. Let's use that as an example. This horrible bill that's going to pass, but they don't even have 10 minutes to call their representative, you know? So actually getting people to do something, is difficult. So I would have liked to have seen that young man's energy channeled into something a little bit more productive than destroying his own life.
Well, I told you earlier, you know, I got a lot of hate mail for that little, whatever it was, 3-4 minute, 5 minute segment that I did on him. Cause and frankly, to be honest, to all the haters out there, you know, everybody wants a martyr, but no one wants to get up off the couch.
Right.
And that's terribly disappointing. And I also had a lot of people attack me, by the way, for my little tongue-in-cheek comment at the end where I had the White House, the Pentagon, the Capitol building, the CIA, and said, you know, if you, you know, why set yourself on fire when you can set a Fed on fire? and I had people say, Alan, that's inciting violence. That's wrong. I'm going to report this video. And I thought, okay, so these people are fine with you killing yourself. Just not right. Killing any of the bad guys. I'm sorry. Yeah. How am I the bad guy here?
Right. Yeah. 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 That was definitely violence, right? It just was directed at himself. I mean, I guess you could say that he chose to do that, but nah.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Anyway, so I don't know. I guess really what it boils down to for me is that, and same thing with the poll from earlier, is if people have such a strong opinion about, okay, well, the state is evil. And by the way, I'm not just talking about kind of our niche autistic libertarian and ANCAP audience. I mean, just the public at large. Most people don't think Jeffrey Epstein killed himself.
Right.
And I don't mean most libertarian. I mean, most people. Mm-hmm. This Boeing guy, everyone on Twitter who's looking like, yeah, he didn't kill himself. They killed him. Mm-hmm. It's like, okay, so if everyone very just nonchalantly agrees that, oh, yeah, they had him killed. They, and we're not going to get into who they is, but they had him killed. It's like, okay, so you're dealing with really powerful, really evil people who will stop at absolutely nothing to get what they want. So far be it for me to tell people, like, you know, the older I get, the more I'm like, I'm not going to scream voting is violence and all that cringe nonsense. If you want to go vote for your particular brand of authoritarianism, whatever. I hope you win so you can instill your worldview on everyone else. I mean, I guess it's better than the alternative, right? So look, I'm not here to debate that. All I'm saying is that if those people can walk into a maximum security prison and twist Epstein's head around backwards, then I don't think they're just going to go, oh, shucks, when they lose an election 51-49.
Right. Yeah, it kind of undercuts the myth that, you know, people in government are benevolent public servants. And they're yes. not there to make money or to have power. They're there to take care of you. And it's true. They are.
Oh, they'll take care of you, all right.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's what I was about to say. They are there to take care of you. Believe me. No, they're there to increase their own power and their own wealth and their own authority. And I've said this for a long time. I believe that most people who raise to high levels in politics are sociopaths. And if you go do it sometime, go Google the characteristics of a sociopath and then compare those to the skills necessary to be a successful politician, and they line right up. So with all due respect to politicians, and with all due respect, I mean none.
Well, I think, because you and I have talked about this before, is that sure, I don't mean to be so cynical that to say that you and I couldn't sit here and at least rattle off a short list of names of people that we would say, I feel pretty confident that guy sure. is not a bloodthirsty tyrant. Yeah, I don't think Thomas Massey wants to kill us if we disagree with him. I feel fairly confident in saying that. But with that said, not to be a hypocrite, I think at the same time, a lot of the issue is everyone's opinion is, oh, but not my guy.
Yeah.
My guy's not like, I mean, how did the Nancy Pelosi's and Mitch McConnell's of the world get reelected for 50 years? It's, well, of course, Congress's approval rating is 1%, but my congressman's approval rating is, it's probably yeah. only 30, but it's higher than 1%. Right. And so, and that is a phenomenon that stretches the generations.
Yeah. And I think it even goes a bit further. I think it's not necessarily even as much individuals, although you do have individuals that rise to that cult of personality level. But I don't think that there's a lot of people out there, even your diehard Democrats, that are like, man, Joe Biden is just the best, right? No, he's the Democrat, so we're going to vote for him.
Yeah.
And so you get this party mentality, and it's not even that my guy is okay, but it's like, well, Mitch McConnell, he's pretty horrible, but he's a Republican at least, you know. So I think you even get that phenomenon going in, the whole party, red team, blue team stuff.
Well, I think, you know, their being too is that it's, on the one hand, you know, anyone, because you hear the phrases of, like, you know, being perpetually off online, right? You know, you need to get off the internet, you need to go touch grass. And one of the reasons why I like to try to start some of our conversations from a really basic level and build up is because I think 99.9% of the people out there haven't ever heard of half of the things we talk about. I don't mean have a negative opinion. I mean, they don't know. They don't have an opinion on it. And I usually defend kind of the salt of the earth types because they're trying to go to work, right? They're trying to pay their bills and feed their families. It's like, look, man, I'm sure that article you wrote about CBDCs is just gosh darn interesting, but you know, rent's due and I gotta be up early and I can sympathize with that. It's rational ignorance, right? You know, I'm ignorant about a lot of things, rationally or otherwise. But at the same time, I think that most people would agree with you if you were to just say, well, an election between Biden and Trump is bad because on net, most people don't want that election and most people don't want those two candidates like as a combination. They don't want to see that election. And yet in a system that allegedly is the will of the people, that's what we got.
That's what we got.
And so here we are.
Yeah, for sure. And I think you're right about the you know, rational ignorance. I spend most of my time writing about monetary policy. It's taken me years to understand monetary policy, and I still don't completely understand monetary policy. So how can I expect some guy who's just trying to, you know, whatever he's doing during the day, and he has to deliver pizzas at night because he's not making enough money doing whatever he's doing at day to pay his bills. He gets that the money's effed up, but, you know, how can I expect him to understand the intricacies of the bond market, right? I mean, it's just, there's only so much time in a day, and his time is taken up. So, you know,
I
don't know.
I think, and I'm sorry to interrupt you, because that just spurred this comment that I want you to reply to, is that if you had that guy's attention right now and you said, no, look, I know that this is a lot to digest, but let me lay out this case for you. I think that even the most well-meaning person who tries their best to understand what you're throwing at them could listen and go, And then when you're done with your presentation, say, okay, well, what the hell do you want me to do about it?
That's true. And that's a fair question. Vote harder, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I think there is value in people understanding. You know, I think maybe the greatest hope is that more and more people actually disengage and just that the whole thing falls apart from lack of legitimacy. I don't know that that could ever happen, but, you know, I don't think you're going to vote your way to liberty or prosperity. And, you know, there's so much power and corruption in the government, especially as you go into higher levels. The only thing that I can do, and this is my work, is to try to gum up the works as much as possible by using these various power sources to compete against each other and hopefully create a little bit of gridlock. But you know, maybe the greatest hope is Joe Blow, who is too busy to fathom all of this, that just doesn't even care. But then, you know, I could see the other side of that. Somebody's going to say, oh, well, like Plato said, or whoever it was, you know, if you don't pay attention to politics, it'll certainly pay attention to you. I don't know.
Yeah.
I just say, you know, I just want to watch hockey.
Well, on that note, but since we're running short on time, I want us to take at least a few minutes to mention the 10th Amendment Center, which, of course, you can find at the 10th Amendment, it's just 10thAmendmentCenter.com. So folks who have watched this show for long enough, I haven't exactly kept it a secret. I do some stuff for TAC every now and again. Yeah, there's this guy with black rim glasses that goes, write this. And I meekly say, yes, sir. And then he says he was just kidding. He doesn't give a shit. But one of the things, and I've said this before on shows, is that one of the things that I think has been a striking learning experience for me in kind of delving into the world of, you know, localization and state level politics and nullification and 10th Amendment is in particular the bill reports that I write and then send to you to totally rewrite and then upload, where so often we're looking at a bill that this isn't its first rodeo. It's been introduced a second time, a third time, a fourth time. And I don't mean with edits. Sometimes it's just a copy pasta of the previous bill, because it can be you know, one legislative cycle, another, just to get a few, just to get into a committee and then get a few more votes and then get into another committee and then get a few more votes. And then it's gone and it's away for a year or two. And then it, and then it's reintroduced by a different sponsor and it's the same bill and they give it another go. And I guess ultimately what I'm getting at is I think, A, again, I think most people have no idea how the legislative cycle works at any level, but even in their own state, close to home. And two, I think a concept that's really hard for people who only see that there's an election once every 4 years between two old white guys, that they don't get how it can take generations of battling to get that one bill. And I'll turn this over to you to comment, but it reminds me, I went to an event not long ago and I was seated next to a lawyer, which of course obviously means blow my brains out, right? But he actually said, for one of the lizard people, he actually said something really profound, which was one of the toughest things about legislating, whether it be, you know, trying to pass good legislation like raw milk or, you know, ending a federal prohibition on anything for that matter. You know, if you're a school choice person or if you're trying to ban CBDCs from being recognized as money in your state, whatever it is that you have to be vigilant and you have to be willing to go to war legislatively for the censors on YouTube. You have to be willing to go at it year after year after year, session after session after session, to crawl those little bitty inches. But on the other side of the coin, they only have to win once. Yeah. If somebody wants to pass a bill that says, oh, well, Mike Meharry can't do podcasts anymore, they only got to get their foot in the door one time. And the one time you don't have 51% of the votes, you're out. You've just lost one of your, a little bit of liberty. It just seems like an impossible battle to win to a lot of people.
Yeah. Well, I always go back to this quote by Thomas Jefferson. I really like it. And he said, the ground of liberty is to be gained by inches. And so we take that inch and then we press forward for what we can take additionally. And, you know, I'm not going to sit here and tell you that if you go and put your 99999.99 into the donation at the 10th Amendment Center, that you're going to get liberty. Still do it.
Yeah. Please don't sell us short, but yeah.
But we live in a real world, right? And we all have to decide how we want to engage in it. For me, it's important to try to gain a little bit of space, even if it's just an inch, for liberty. If not for me, for my kids. And so that's why I do what I do. I can be as pessimistic as the next guy, and a lot of times I am. But
correct.
I know for a fact, yes, just ask me about the lightning. But I know for a fact that if I don't do anything, nothing's going to happen. So I do what little I can, and I hope we can gain that inch, and, you know, maybe somebody can build on that inch and we'll get 2 inches, and maybe in 5 years we'll have at least 5 inches of liberty. That would be better than what we have now. So I'm just going to keep on keeping on.
Well, a wise friend of mine once wrote that I don't know if I can stop the destroyers, but I can be a builder. So, Mike, on that note, where can people go to you to support you and find more of your stuff?
Well, of course, you can go to 10thAmendmentCenter.com, and as you've already noted, there's no the, so just 10thAmendmentCenter.com, T-E-N-T-H. And if you're interested in following more of my musings on the Fed and sound money and those types of things, you can go to moneymetals.com, so that's moneymetals.com/news, and most of what is up there, not all of it, but most of that stuff up there is written by me. And if you want to buy precious metals, it's a good place to do that too. I'll throw a little shameless plug. If you want to go to my own website, michaelmeharry.com, I haven't updated anything in a while, but my old podcast is up there and some interesting stuff. So I'm out there. You can find me.
Mike, we're going to get you out of here on this one. Are you ready for the bonus round?
I'm ready.
Is a corn dog a Wellington?
Okay, this is going to sound really stupid. I don't know what a Wellington is.
What? You know the Wellington, like where they have, you have like a steak that's inside a loaf of bread, basically. You know what I'm talking about?
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I've never had that.
Yeah. Well, I thought you were the guy with all the gold and silver. You were just eating Wellington every night. My mistake.
Oh, I'm spending all my money on gold and silver. There is no Wellington. Okay, so based on your description, assuming that that description is accurate, I'm going to go with the big yes. Corn dog is a Wellington.
That is correct. A corn dog is, in fact, a Wellington. Mike Meharry, thanks for celebrating episode 300 with us, buddy.
Oh, you're welcome. It's my pleasure. And congratulations on 300. That is no easy feat. And I'm glad that I've got to be a little part of it.
Yeah, well, oh, man. I all the things that popped into my head were, Alan, he just said something nice. Don't say something so smart-ass and terrible. And so I won't. Guys, we're going to be back to wrap up the show right after this commercial break. Don't go away.
If you're enjoying tonight's show, consider supporting the program by becoming a member of our Patreon. That's over at patreon.com/AlanMosley.
Like our Facebook page. It's facebook.com/AlanMosleyTV. You can follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/AlanMosleyTV. Subscribe to our YouTube page. It's youtube.com/AlanMosleyTV. But if you're more of a listener than a watcher, you get us on your favorite podcasting platforms of choice thanks to Spotify, It's Too Late with Alan Mosley and Alan Mosley TV. Also, don't forget to get your tickets for the 6th annual It's Too Late live show, Saturday, May 18th, in beautiful Columbia, Tennessee. Dave, do you have a final thought?
You know, throughout that interview, I think I figured it out.
Okay.
Sydney Sweeney's a psyop. I have no idea where she came from. Mm-hmm. That's the only answer.
You're probably right, but as we've discussed in the past, there's a certain level of hot you can be to overcome filters. So normally we would say no feds, but yeah. For Sydney Sweeney, I mean, maybe I do like the government. I don't know.
Maybe.
300 episodes. How about that?
Wow, that's a lot.
Let's try doing 301, and we'll just take it one week at a time.
That's, I like that. Baby steps.
Okay. After party?
Yeah, definitely.
Guys, the after party is only on Twitch. It's twitch.tv/AlanMosleyTV. Thank you so much for watching another episode of It's Too Late. We will see you next week. Lyle says, Alan, are you still doing your show? No.
Oh, he's not seeing the posts?
No, we're done, dude.
Yeah. People see him on Twitter.
Yeah.
I mean, X.
We quit like 6 months ago.
These are all replays.
Yeah. Next week's Ron Paul again. Yeah.
Oh, I'm excited to see him again.
Yeah. I'm going to ask him if a hot dog is a sandwich. Cut.
That's
feed.
Where you get the real get the libertarian stance on that.
It's libertarian stance on D's nuts.
Oh.